I think we're joined now by Stephen Gowans himself. Are you there, Stephen?
I'm here. Hello, Phil.
How you doing? You didn't see the movie The American Sniper.
I did, unfortunately, on Saturday.
Ouch. Oh, hey, you could... I, it wouldn't be fair to ask you, but I guess I could ask you a general impression.
Oh, it was dreadful.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even interesting as a movie if you ignored the politics, and the politics were reprehensible. It was just terrible.
Mm-hmm. I won't keep us on this theme too long because we want to ask you about Syria, but... it seems to me that the makers of this film have a different foreign policy than the one that Washington says it has, and that they have a character who and a director who align themselves with Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin. Chris Kyle was Sarah Palin's bodyguard. Odd notions about who the Iraqis are and who our allies are, allegedly.
Yeah, well, there are many things to object to in the film. One that I found objectionable was the connection that was drawn between Iraq and 9/11, which there was no connection. The treatment of all Iraqis as evil and savages. And it brought to mind something that Oscar Lafontaine, the German politician, the leftist German politician, said recently. He said that he was always challenging the chancellor in parliament to define terrorism, and she wouldn't. But at one point, a German official did come up with a definition, and the definition was that terrorism is the unlawful use of violence for political ends. And he said... in the Bundestag, well, you know what you've just done? You've now declared Bush and Blair as terrorists. Because, I mean, the invasion of Iraq was the unlawful use of violence for political ends. And that's completely missed in the movie. I mean, people who are defending their own country from an invasion, a terrorist attack from outside, are described as terrorists. When, in fact, it's people like Chris Kyle who are the terrorists.
Well, indeed, and you know, there seems to be a kind of a decadence in the culture in that they equate him with Audie Murphy from World War II and Sergeant York from World War I, both of whom were engaged in wars in which the states declared war on each other, and the two sides were in uniform and at least under some kind of rubric of warfare laws governing warfare. My understanding of the situation that he's portrayed in, he's not fighting uniformed opponents. He's fighting classic insurgent.
Yeah.
Someone who is by definition a civilian,
mm-hmm.
and he's not legally there. So that's what, to my mind, I mean, the attempt to rationalize this and to turn it into warfare is misconstruing an illegal occupation.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you've put your finger on an interesting question. You speak of the puppets and the anti-puppets, and you want to get into the issue of why you have a phenomenon of a secular government in Egypt, which is has an antagonist, the Muslim Brotherhood. And then in Syria, do you have a secular government? And it also has a Islamic antagonist, the Brotherhood. And now, of course, there's many formations that flow from this concept of the Brotherhood with jihadis in both instances. The United States is giving $1.3 billion to Egypt and is giving nothing and quite the opposite to Syria. So could you take that apart for us? How come?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of struck, you know, by that parallel. And here we have the West siding with secularism in Egypt and the use of coercive methods to quell opposition to it. And then supporting jihad in Syria and condemning the Syrian government's attempts to quash it. So, you know, here we have... Well, the West isn't calling for Egypt's president, Sisi, to step down, even though Sisi's Egypt is hardly the model of liberal democracy the West professes to promote. I mean, Sisi's imprisoned tens of thousands of political foes and imposed new restrictions on protesting, on the media, on non-governmental organizations, on human rights groups. I mean, his forces have killed over 1,000 supporters of the former president, and they killed them for the crime of demonstrating against the ouster of the legitimately elected president. Mm-hmm. And even Human Rights Watch has concluded that Sisi's violent crackdown was what they called a crime against humanity. So in short, the West is backing a dictator, and Sisi is essentially a dictator, who has a deplorable record of human rights violations, and they give him over $1 billion of military aid annually, and he's also getting billions of dollars from Saudi Arabia, another great promoter of democracy and human rights, which the press seems to be falling all over these days, in connection with the death of the king.
Yes, a great reformer. You know, we might lose those reforms. That's, we're really worried about that.
And then, you know, meanwhile, we have the West and Turkey and the Gulf oil tyrannies who are funneling arms and money and other assistance to these violent Sunni Muslim fundamentalists in Syria, including Al-Qaeda and its offshoots. And these are just the latest expression of this decades-long jihad in Syria, which began with the Muslim Brotherhood. And the ostensible rationale for this exercise is said to be the necessity of overthrowing, quote, a dictator with a deplorable record of human rights violations.
Yeah, and by the way, many liberals and many, I guess that's a word for them, and many some people identified as progressives and whatnot have joined in this assault on that government. And they keep saying, well, don't forget the human rights issues with Assad, and don't take your, you know, don't lose your focus on getting rid of President Assad. They did the same as my memory with Gaddafi, actually.
Yeah.
And they all seem to lose their focus on the jihadis.
They do. And while they may pay lip service to the kind of repressions and authoritarianism and human rights violations of Egypt or Saudi Arabia or Bahrain, or we could go through the whole list, you know, of countries that are allies of the United States, they really seem to be most exercised about what happens in Syria and in Libya, which were two countries that were secular and independent of the United States, or weren't in what I've heard recently been called the U.S. security orbit. But if you talk, I mean, actually the president of Syria, Assad, actually explained this kind of double standard. He was being interviewed recently, and he said, you know, the West's insistence that he step down is based on, well, he said it has nothing to do with democracy or freedom or supporting the people in the region. He said the West wants client states ruled by puppets. And then he pointed out that France had tried to pressure Syria to play a role with Iran, in what he called concerning the nuclear file. So in other words, France was trying to pressure Syria to persuade Iran to give up its nuclear its nuclear energy program. And the Syrian government said, no, we're not going to do that because that's against the interests of Iran. France also asked Syria to take a position against Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad, and Syria refused to do that. And France also wanted Syria to sign the Euro Association Agreement, and Assad said, well, that's against our interest.
Yeah, by the way, that's a very, that struck me. Can you tell us, what is that agreement? What's that about?
Well, in the view of the Syrians, this is an agreement that was going to turn Syria into an open market for their products, while giving Syria a very small share of the European market. So the Assad said, we refuse to do that. That's not that's against our interest. So, you know, the Syrian government refuses to be one of the West's marionettes, unlike the Egyptian government. Refuses to play ball, unlike with the U.S., unlike the Saudi Arabian government, insists on promoting domestic interests at the expense of foreign powers and foreign businesses. Mm-hmm. But Egypt, you know, has stepped wholly into the club of the West Marionette, so it gets treated differently in the press. It gets treated differently by the West. It even, in many respects, gets treated differently by the left in the West.
Yes, and, you know, we ought to remember, they, on the matter of Gaza, the Egyptians have been really quite sadistic. They, on their end, could easily help relieve the pressure of the situation, and they, quite the contrary.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, you could argue that they sold out the Palestinians when they made peace with the Israelis to recover the Sinai Peninsula. And ever since that time, they've essentially been a non-factor in terms of providing any resistance to the Israel.
Isn't that the point, by the way, at which both Israel and Egypt, because of that recognition, began to receive that $1.5 billion a year, sort of that was part of the deal?
Yes.
Matching funds.
Mm. Well, I believe the...
Or balanced.
The Israelis get more.
Mm-hmm. A slight edge.
Yes.
Yeah. But there was a reward, and it goes to the Egyptian army, which happens to have a country, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's how some people have put that.
And this is, this is a phenomenon we're seeing more and more of armies that basically, they're called the people, you know. This policy of towards Syria, now it's become a little more, this is now the spring 20, we're coming to be the spring 2015. Isn't this the year that the U.S. is also going to overtly, openly arm and train jihadists to what they're going to call the moderates, I guess, but they're going to try to take advantage of the weakened situation of Assad to overthrow him.
Mm, yes, they're going to train them in Turkey and Jordan and Saudi Arabia, those moderate ones they can find, although they acknowledge that they're having difficulty finding any moderate rebels.
Yeah, and don't they have a kind of a trust me kind of attitude? I mean, they just say, we're going to be training moderates, and the media says, well, which one of these guys is moderate? And they say, well, you know, we're developing them. But then there's no follow-up question, how did that go? You know?
I know, they use the language loosely as well, moderate. What does moderate mean?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to mean anyone who's willing to kowtow to U.S. Demands.
Mm-hmm.
But are they moderate in the sense that they're liberal Democrats? No, they don't seem to be. They all seem to be Islamic fundamentalists.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and kind of the phenomenon seems to be they use them as break and enter people, and their concept, I guess, is that later on they'll sort it all out and find somebody who looks good in a suit to front it, right? I mean, they're still shopping for this person in Libya right now. Libya doesn't even have an identifiable government that I can see.
No, it's in a complete shambles, a complete state of anarchy and chaos. And I think that perhaps is recognized now that that was a complete disaster, and mm-hmm. that perhaps NATO would have gone about that differently if it was to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, that's certainly the case. I mean, the role of these people on the ground is simply to undermine the existing government and to overthrow it and to create a vacuum that's then fulfilled by people who are essentially puppets of the United States and of its allies.
Mm-hmm. Now, a question here strikes me that Canada is getting itself involved in, and maybe you could help us understand this. See, Canada now has sent 69 soldiers, and I forget the number of airplanes. It's not an overwhelming number. It's somewhere between 3 and 9, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. And so, and then we're told that these, the Toronto Star tells us these are elite. The 69 guys are elite. So, as you know, 69 white guys who are elite, they can conquer anybody. That's as old as colonialism, isn't it? I mean, that idea. But at any rate, they're there to help the government of Iraq fight off jihadis, except that in order to fight jihadis, Syria has become involved in that the U.S. is allowing itself and unnamed allies, France has not agreed to attack Syria on Syrian airspace, and I don't think Britain is. But Canada's slipping into this area where not only will there be an issue of are we in combat or going to be in combat, but which country is it we're involved with? Because the U.S. seems to be deliberately obscuring the fact that you have two sovereign countries, that real borders exist, but they are bombing in sovereign state of Syria, fighting the bad guys, the IS. Now, our prime minister says he's now more and more inclined to fight those same guys. Fight them where? Does that include Syria? And because, you know, we have the old question, is this mission creep or creeps on a mission?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you fight them in Syria, then that is by definition terroristic, because it's the unlawful use of violence for political ends.
Back to the sniper.
Yeah, and the Syrian government certainly isn't prepared to accept this violation of their sovereignty. Although I suppose you could argue that you're not engaged in terrorism in Iraq, since the Iraqi government has agreed to the intervention. Mm-hmm. But I find the Prime Minister's argument that Canada is engaged in a war against terrorism to be completely absurd. Mm-hmm. This is his way of justifying this combat role or non-combat role, whichever is the case for those 16.
Whichever has the most votes in it.
Yes. And we're fighting terrorism in Iraq, but apparently not in Syria.
Yeah. Can I ask you, by the way, did you notice how there is a relationship between Hollywood and foreign policy? Now we have this movie, and the first engagement involving Canadians, they said that they were minding their own business, you know, with the advanced forces of Iraq, and they came under fire, and they neutralized that fire with snipers. And you say, wait a minute. You know, how did that come up? And they said, but no one was harmed. Oh, you, really? What? It doesn't sound like much of a fight. You had to engage, and after your engagement, nothing happened?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could comment on Canadian media and the lack of curiosity about events. That is actually an Iraqi army matter. Why didn't somebody ask them if they got rescued by a Canadian sniper?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because, frankly, I find it bunk. I don't believe a word of it. And nothing happened except we had a big shoot 'em up and we won. Did anybody interview the guys on the other side, what they thought they saw that day?
Yeah.
I know that's asking a lot, but to my mind, this is where we, you know, the sniper's got $200 million in 2 weeks. That shows you everybody wants to start getting over there and shooting the place up. The email traffic is anti-Arab, anti-Islamic. It's highly phobic. It's highly homicidal. Mm-hmm. And so the Canadian Prime Minister says, yep, one of our snipers, we neutralized him. That means, well, gee, I can't wait for the next one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I sign? Where can my son get to be part of this thing? What sort of episodes are we having here? Well, that isn't an engagement. Nothing actually happened, unless they're going to show us that something happened.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's no attempt either to even criticize or think about this claim that we're fighting terrorism, the terrorism of Islamic State. I mean, is that what we're doing? I mean, you can point to you know, these events that happened in Ottawa and in Quebec, which were attributed to those who sympathized with ISIS, so-called terrorist events. But, I mean, the only reason that the Islamic State has any grievance with Canada is because Canada joined the campaign to degrade and ultimately destroy Islamic State on territory the Islamic State considers to be its homeland. So this seems to be a reversal of the causal order. The Prime Minister is suggesting that terrorism erupted and now we have to go to Iraq to fight it, rather than we went to Iraq, and as a result of going to Iraq, there's been this kind of blowback.
And Afghanistan.
And Afghanistan, yes.
Yes. And by the way, there is a tie-in with the death of the king in that the ideology, and I've never seen anybody counter this point, is that it is the Wahhabi school of thought that all the main jihadi forces represent. Sometimes people say Sunni Shia, but actually the Sunnis are being attacked by the IS. More of them die at the hands of these guys than do other elements. Yet the fact that you have a Saudi-based ideology never gets the first, never doesn't get to be the lead in any story.
No, we don't hear very many unpleasant things about Saudi Arabia. Certainly not these days, do we?
No, it's led by reformers. And we have more. What we think is the next decade is going to be a breakthrough that the women who own Mercedes in Saudi Arabia will be driving them.
I mean, it's really astonishing the way in which the media has treated the death of the Saudi Arabian king, or even the United States. It was Glenn Greenwald who drew the comparison between how the U.S. president greeted the death of Hugo Chavez, which was rather churlish, almost not even acknowledging it. You know, the effusive praise that he's conferred upon the Saudi Arabian king. And Greenwald points out, I mean, what is this? I mean, you had Chavez, was elected, used the country's oil resources for the benefit of the people. And then we have this Saudi Arabian, essentially, dictator who is using these oil resources for the benefit of the Saud family and for U.S. and Western oil companies.
And the population sees through this even without the help of our media. I mean, it's patent, isn't it? I mean, people say he's an absolute monarch, right? So the only reason you must be there is because business and oil. And so when you tell me you believe in human rights, I'm supposed to join in the hypocrisy of pretending I believe that. We started our program today talking about the fact that the U.S. is negotiating with Cuba, and they're saying, well, the Cubans are still unresponsive on human rights. Pretty hard to lay alongside the story of the king of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, still unresponsive on human rights, and how quickly we forget the story that was in the press not too long ago about the 100 people who were tortured to death in U.S. custody in Iraq. This is a country talking about human rights.
Yes, and to, apropos of that, it strikes me that we're getting a message. That's why I say it's kind of a double. Hollywood is telling us something in the U.S., and they do seem to be hand in hand, but they told us in a couple of their bigger films that torture is a good idea. I think it was called Zero Dark Thirty. And then in this, their latest one, they seem to be saying, to win the war, if you're really a patriot, you got to kill kids. So don't give me a hard time. The guy who kills kids is a hero. And so there's doing something to the national psyche that probably they ought to examine before they hurt themselves.
Yeah.
They hurt themselves more.
Yes, and the American Sniper placed a lot of emphasis on the idea of evil. There's evil in the world, and all the evil seems to be in Iraq and exhibited by Iraqis. But I think as Noam Chomsky recently pointed out, if you really want to find evil in the world, you don't have to look much further than the White House.
Yeah. Well, or as you pointed out, the definition of what a terrorist is, all they have to do is look in the mirror. Illegal use of force to achieve political ends. I better ask you about, and I think you probably agree to talk about this. I didn't formally put it there, but if you could tell us what you think is happening in Ukraine.
What's happening? And you mean?
Yeah, but this latest go-round where we seem to be heading towards a deeper confrontation, there is the allegation. Let's start with the allegation. It is claimed that we're basically my Samantha Powers, that the Russians are fighting the Ukrainian government in the area of eastern Ukraine. What is your take on that?
The Russian government? I don't think the Russian government is fighting. One thing that struck me about this is that the Kiev doesn't seem to be particularly interested in talking peace. It won't talk peace. It won't talk directly to the rebels. And even if you look at some press accounts, they'll say, well, you know, they're not really interested in talks because with rebels advancing, talks are only likely to cement separatist gains. So, I mean, Kiev, it seems to me, is simply interested in overcoming the rebels, and they're not interested in peace. Interestingly, I don't know how widely reported this was, but the president of France, Hollande, has not been echoing this kind of propaganda about Russia, and he recently said that, you know, Putin doesn't want to annex eastern Ukraine. What he wants is that Ukraine not become a member of NATO. The idea of Mr. Putin is not to have an army at Russia's borders.
Yes, which they were promised would not happen.
Yeah.
So now, following on it, I mean, when you say that, does Hollande seem to be, by saying that, is he agreeing that that is a valid point and he would accept that NATO not go to the Russian border?
Yes, and he seems to be, he's becoming fatigued of the sanctions.
Well, that leads me to, could that be why Mr. Obama and or his vice president did not show up in Paris? That was a snub, wasn't it? I mean, I don't see how you could not make it a snub.
Perhaps. Yeah. I haven't thought of that, but that may be the case.
Well, you just answered the question. And I think you got it right. No, that was very helpful. I did not know Hollande had said that, and I try hard to find out what's going on in the world. This is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com.